Hello, this is Yannikin Smucker. I'm the digital editor of the Oral History Review. And joining me today for a conversation are some of the contributors to our recent special section in the volume 45, issue 1. This was winter, spring 2018 edition of the Oral History Review. We had a special section called Decentering and Decolonizing Feminist Oral Histories, Reflections on the State of the Field in the Early 21st Century. And we had fabulous contributions from a number of authors, but also sort of leading the charge were our guest editors, Katrina Spigley and Stacey Zambricki. And we also have joining us as part of this conversation, Lorraine Sutherland, who is one of the co-authors of one of the articles, as well as Jennifer Breyer. And I'm really delighted to also have here on the recording, Kathy Nastrom, who was the outgoing editor, or is the former editor-in-chief of the Oral History Review, and she worked closely with this group of authors and editors to pull together this special section on feminist oral histories. I'm really happy to have you all here, have a little conversation about the origins of this special section and some of the outcomes that have happened. We recently all saw each other at the Oral History Association meeting in Montreal, and there were a number of panels that sort of followed the thread of the feminist special section, as well as sort of built upon it with some future projects. So as we go forward in this conversation, I'd like you each to briefly discuss your journey to feminist oral history. And in doing so, if you could highlight your connection, if any, to the really seminal book, Women's Words. And you can feel free to give a brief description of your work and your contributions to the section as well as how this has all played out both at the OHA and in other projects. I'd also like to hear from you about how these ideas of decolonizing and decentering oral history are important to you and how it figures into your own work. I'm first going to turn to Katrina, one of the co-editors of the section, and she'll share a little bit of the where this whole section came from and how it has grown since a few years ago when you first began talking about it.
Thank you so much, Hennekin. So this is Katrina Strigley, one of the co-editors of the special issue. Stacey and I were so grateful to be able to work on this issue with Kathy and with all of the contributors to it. And I thought today that what I would do is just give a little bit of context of the origins of the special issue and where the questions that are at the heart of it came from. And really, I think that there are the key starting point for this special issue was the Berkshire Conference on the History of Women in 2014, which was held in Toronto, Ontario, and outside the United States for the first time in the Berks history. And for that conference, Stacey Zambricki and Pam Sugerman, along with the support of Frank Iacovetta, had organized a panel to have a look at women's words and assess the state of the field of feminist oral history in 2014. The panel included authors from the 1991 issue book, Women's Words, and also a range of international scholars like Lynn Abrams, Natalie Wynn from Australia, for example, to come together on a plenary type setting to discuss the impact of women's words and where they, where they saw the field at that particular stage. And the room was packed that day for that panel, and it was actually a panel that was off-site from the main conference happenings. It was on the very first day, which often doesn't draw a lot of participants to panels because people are arriving, traveling from distances for such a large conference. So I was commenting on the panel, and the room was packed beyond capacity, and I could see Franca Iacovetta, president of the Berkshire Conference, outside the room running around trying to find chairs to accommodate all of the people who were trying to get into the room. So that was the first indication to us for sure that people were really interested in this conversation and in, thinking about the impact of women's words and then, where are we in the 21st century in the field? And then, at the end of the panel that day, we had time for questions, and Lorraine Sutherland, who's with us this afternoon and who is a contributing author to this special issue, raised a really important question for the panelists. And, Lorraine will speak herself about the article that we wrote together that, builds from this particular question, but it was, where do I fit as an Indigenous woman, as a Cree woman in this panel, in this field of feminist oral history? I don't actually see diverse ways of listening to and sharing story reflected in this conversation today. So, both celebratory and very critical and important questions that we needed to reflect on. So we issued a call for papers for what is now the edited volume Beyond Women's Words, Feminisms and Oral Histories in the 21st Century that I edited with Frank Iacovetta and Susan Bricky. And when we issued that call for papers with a lot of support from Kathy Nastrom and received an overwhelming number of responses, people, again, were really interested in having these conversations and engaging with some of these critical questions around decolonizing and decentering in particular. And so Stacey and I realized there isn't enough room. The book is already very big and there isn't enough room here. And we approached Kathy to ask if we could work with the Oral History Review to develop an issue around the theme of decolonizing and decentering that would both circle, back to some of the really important insights of women's words, but also, answer some of the critical questions raised by people like Lorraine in that panel from the Berks.
Thanks so much, Katrina. I'd like to now turn to Lorraine Sutherland, who co-authored an article in this issue with Katrina called Decolonizing, Indigenizing, and Learning Bisca B.I. Bayayang, I'm sure I'm butchering that word, in the field, Our Oral History Journey. And we'd love to hear from you, Lorraine, about how you contributed to this project as well.
Absolutely. Wajay Miswe, hello everyone. Lorraine Sutherland in Indishnakazin, Attawapiskat First Nation Mandushjin. My name is Lorraine Sutherland and I'm from Attawapiskat First Nation. And in thinking about what Katrina had shared, we have been on a long journey in oral history. And when I look back and think about all the things that I've done leading up to this point, attending the OAH conference, I hadn't realized how much work that I've done, I guess, in and around, feminist oral history. And I don't think I would have called it that while I was doing it. I think it just sort of happened by accident. And it really did start, me in the classroom, teaching grade two in my home community of Attawapiskat, where, at this point I had had, I was in the Aboriginal Teacher Education Program there that gave me a diploma. And it was Indigenous based, and the curriculum was from an Indigenous perspective, and it really allowed for me to look at the curriculum that I was teaching the children in my home community, and some of them were my own relatives and and members of my community. And I realized really quickly back in 2000 that I was you know, for lack of a better word, I was inculcating, you know, forcing upon or whatever you want to call it, a Western way of knowing, a Western way of understanding the history of Canada, you know, since, you know, the time contact. And from there, I found out really quickly that after the fur trade in Canada, we sort of fell off the pages of history and didn't exist after that. And so for me, it was really important to, for our students to know and for myself to know that we too were an ancient people. And so from there, I decided to pursue my undergraduate degree at Nipissing University, and that's where I had met Stephen High in a first year history course. And I really felt it was important to, you know, to know about my grandparents living on the land, you know, as they had since time immemorial, and what that involved. And so, so I, you know, because I'm in academia, I'm in a first year history course, I want to get it right. So I Googled a lot of words, like, you know, how to interview a family member, how to interview my grandmother, how to interview women, how, you know, what sort of questions are involved in interviewing women, and so on. And so I may or may not have come across, you know, women's words, but I certainly came across, you know, a lot of the stuff that I did Google of, you know, how to develop questions. And for the most part, those questions were, you know, had to be developed in chronological order from, you know, your early years to your elderhood or whatever you want to call it, but it really was chronological. And so from there, because I couldn't travel home, you know, it was a very expensive and to get home. And so I had asked my brother to interview my grandmother using this long list of questions, not realizing that it really didn't get anywhere, because a lot of the questions were very closed, and as a result of that were very, very personal. And towards the end of the interview, I had one open-ended question that allowed for my grandmother to share, you know, on her own terms what, you know, story and life on the land was about. And it didn't start from the day that she was born. It really just started, and the prompt for that discussion was a picture hanging on the wall of you know, and she's probably in her 30s at the time, and she has one child, and she's talking about the women in that picture and what they're doing at that place and that time in that, you know, in on the territory, in around her traditional territory. So anyway, I just from there, it that taught me a lot, and I didn't realize, you know, and it was only in doing my master's that I realized that the way that I had interviewed my grandmother through my brother was not the way that we share stories. It's something that I didn't realize that it was something that we've always done since time immemorial, and it did not involve, you know, a set of questions, and it just sort of happened naturally. And so from there, you know, and interviewing my mother, I sort of took that stance to let her, of course I had some questions, but they were never asked during the interview. Maybe one was the first one, but ultimately it was my mother sharing with me what she wanted to share. And through that process, she, you know, the stories, the Debat Jamuna, you know, transcended time and place. There really wasn't like when I was born or when I was here, when I was that, none of that existed. It was just whatever she wanted to share on the land, you know, when she was not in residential school, because the piece was, I was hoping to find out, you know, that history, but that didn't happen in terms of what she experienced at the school. But everything that she shared with me was when she was not there, when she was most happiest, which was on the land with her parents. So leading up to where we are now, I still don't know if I would call it feminist oral history for myself, being Indigenous and being in Inuit from Attawapiskat, because that was something that we've always done. There was always an understanding between the men and women and children that we were equal. And so there is no word for feminist. The word feminist doesn't exist in my language. And so, but I guess in talking to this, you know, special issue and women's words, it sort of is doing that. And so I will leave it there, because I love to talk and I love to share, and I will let others do that as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. I'm next going to turn to Jennifer Breyer, who's here. She recently published her in this special section. Her article is "I'm Still Surviving: Oral Histories of Women Living with HIV/AIDS in Chicago." Jenny?
Thanks so much. For me, I mean, it's such a wonderful thing to hear about the legacy of this work in the Berks, and what it means to think about the Berks as a site of feminist history. I'm a longtime member of the Berks, and that Toronto meeting was a very special one. It was the first time the Berks was meeting outside the United States, and I actually think that in part for me as a scholar working in the States, having the conversation led by Indigenous Canadian women and people in Canada is really part of the story of how this came to be that I do think is important, which I sort of am constantly reminded of when I'm in Canada, where the land acknowledgement starts every session, starts every conversation, and that is really not happening as consistently in the United States as it does there. And I think that that's an interesting question. And for me, what it means to do the work of thinking about decolonizing feminism or decentering feminism, as somebody working in Chicago, where there's a important and complex history of racial segregation and white supremacy, what that means and how we think about it, for me, is really what drove this project and continues to drive this project that I'm working on, which is to, and it's now clear to me what the project is, in part from working on this essay, is to create a living women's history of HIV, and that oral history is really one of the ways to do that. And the idea of a living women's history of HIV is really a profoundly feminist idea. It's also one that is, that recognizes the realities of racial segregation. And so for me, thinking about how I came to this project is about my sense of what I needed to rewrite or what I need to continue to advance in the work that I do writing about the history of HIV, but also about what it means to really bring my training in women's history and history of sexuality, but particularly women's history, to bear on that work and how oral history allows me to do that. So working with the editors of the issue really allowed me to see things that I guess I knew were there, but wasn't fully able to articulate what it means to really center narrators in the process of interpretation, and how to expand and extend that work in ways that are about, in this case, decentering the oral historian, and figuring out how to allow narrators to take up interpretive space as well as sort of narrating particular sets of stories, but really thinking about how they can be the drivers of that historical interpretation.
Thanks, Jenny. I'm just going to turn now to Kathy Nastrom, who is the editor-in-chief for this special section. I'm working to get you off of unmute, working to unmute you. There you are, Kathy. And I'd love to hear a little bit about how the special section came together from you and what it meant to you to be working with these authors and editors.
Yeah, thank you for that opportunity, Yannicka. And it's great to be on the conversation with the other authors of the special section. So at the beginning, Yannicka and you asked about if we wanted to reflect on the impact that women's words, the feminist practice of oral history, had on us when it came out in 1991. And I'll say that that's when I was just coming up in oral history. And I was interested in both women's oral history and civil rights oral history. Those in the United States, those were the two things I was working myself on in my graduate study. And reading that book just felt like it was a book written for me and others like me within oral history, for whom feminism was so central to both our identities as individuals, our political identities, and our work as oral historians. So when Stacy and Katrina offered me this opportunity to be involved and the OHR to be involved in this Beyond Women's Words conversation, it was just, you know, an immediate yes that I wanted to do it. And as we planned the issue, I realized that it was going to end up being the last issue that I produced as editor of the Oral History Review for 6 years. And so it just seemed like such a personally nice closing of the loop. So I was and am delighted to have been involved in it. And the other thing that I'll say by way of contributing to this conversation is a point generally about how deeply the feminist practice of oral history has been embedded in and shaped more general trends, at least in some key regards. And what I'm thinking of in particular is that as Stacy and Katrina and I were sort of engaged in the initial conversations that led to the special section, there was other work coming into the journal at the same time. And it just so happened that a piece by Noah Reisman, who's a scholar working out of Australia, a piece came in that examines his involvement in three LGBTQ oral history projects in Australia. And just so happened that that article kind of went through its own peer review and editorial review and editing process, so that it ended up being another article in this issue, even though it wasn't part of the special section. And what was so striking to me was the way that Noah's article turns on many of the same concerns that were developed in the special section. So how to share authority in doing Indigenous research, how to ground research in Indigenous epistemologies, so what Katrina's been speaking to, what Lorraine's been speaking to, and also the ways in which ethical research requires questioning colonial power relations, which was, all of that was central to the entire special section. So for me, his work was really further evidence of how deeply the theorizing and the practice of feminist oral history has influenced the development of oral history over the last several decades. And so it really was a bringing, for me, it was a bringing together of things that had been of interest and concern to me since I began my work in oral history decades ago, but that they have this very current, you know, in and for the early 21st century perspective. And again, it was just a fabulous way for me to be part of bringing all of those conversations together. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Thanks so much, Kathy. It's really been wonderful to have you all here in conversation together, even though we're remotely scattered across North America right now. So thank you so much for participating both in the special section. It's a really, I think, important contribution to the Oral History Review. And also thank you for being part of this conversation. Again, I'm Yannikin Smucker. I'm the digital editor of the Oral History Review, and this has been the latest installment of OHR Conversations.
In addition to the conversation we just had, one of the other contributors to the special section on feminism, Ayona Radu, also was able to send us a few remarks, although she wasn't able to join us in the conference call. Ayona wrote Blurred Boundaries, Feminisms and Indigenisms, Co-creating an Indigenous Oral History for Decolonization, and I'm happy to append her remarks here onto the rest of the conversation. Again, this has been OHR Conversations. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Hello, my name is Ayona Radu. I'm a settler scholar who lives in Montreal. Montreal is also known as Jojage, which is Mohawk conceded territory, a territory on which the OHA conference took place this last October. I have been working with the Cree Nation in UHG, which is Eastern James Bay, Quebec, for the past 15 years. I spent 2 years living in Nemiska, where I worked as a teacher at the local high school and also as a research associate with the band office in Nemiska. And we worked on different projects from youth empowerment to economic development. For the past 6 years, I have been working almost exclusively with the community of Chisasibi, where through the research project that I undertook for my doctorate program, I developed with the community a land-based healing program, which really was a community-driven project that was done in consultation with the local elders. Eddie Pash, who is the cultural resource and elder in Chisasibi, he program coordinator for the land-based program, and he spends about 4 intakes a year with young people in the bush, teaching them traditional knowledge and the history of Sesebi, and as well as cultural values. And so my journey to feminist oral history is a recent one. The article that was published in the special edition of the Oral History Review was actually the first exploration into taking a feminist critical view at research partnerships that happen in indigenous communities, as well as repositioning the role of settler researchers in supporting community mobilization. My first connection to women's words was through my oral history coursework, where Catherine's Borland article made a huge impression on me, and especially in the way in which settler scholars engage with indigenous stories and indigenous life stories in particular. And so that was my first introduction to women's words. More specifically related to the article that was published, Sondra Hale's work also made me think more in terms of how we can build settler alliances, and whose work is not concerned neither with theory nor with academic priorities, but how to really and effectively deploy indigenous knowledge. And so in this alliance, there's hard work to do in building consensus in terms of personal experiences and relationships, learning how to actually learn from our indigenous research partners, and also the ways in which we share authority and what that means for settler allies who work in indigenous contexts. And so my decolonial work kind of centers around ideas of how, together with communities, we can remake knowledges, how we can redistribute this right to theorize, to be intellectually engaged in how, as a society which goes through decolonization, through a process of decolonization, how together we can bring about this kind of possibilities in which everyday relationships, emotional investments, and different forms of responsibilities and engagement, how they work together and evolve together through a research project. And so for me, feminist oral history and decolonization, their intersection actually helps me think about the ways in which settler researchers can reshape the agendas, can reshape the products and the possibilities embedded in academic research, and how we can remain engaged in both and responsible to both the academy and the indigenous communities with which we work. And so decolonization is at the heart of my work. It is part of my responsibility as a settler researcher in supporting indigenous communities in their priorities and in their vision of life.